Well, I think to answer that question, Saul, you have to analyze the nature of Southern politics since the 1950s. What you had in the 1940s is basically, I think Southern politics began as B.O.T.'s book. And what he did was analyze the Democratic Party, because you didn't have a Republican Party. He basically came up with the idea with parties very factionalized. He came up with three different types of state party. It was all within a Democratic framework, and it was all personality, cult-oriented type things. Race was not really an issue. Race didn't become an issue in the South again until 1954. Race could become an issue if someone had to be soft on the issue, but no one was. So everyone was operating within the framework of a segregated society, so race never became an issue. Obviously, from 1954 to 1966, that 12-year period, race was the issue. And you can analyze, Earl Black wrote a book called Southern Governors and Civil Rights. There hadn't been a comprehensive book written like Key wrote, but Southern Governors and Civil Rights analyzes that period pretty good. And basically what he came up with is the segregation candidate, the candidate who best handled the segregation issue between 54 and 66 basically was a winner. But importantly, the race question was the top, was the issue in all Southern races. This continued up to 70. Now, once you had the Voting Rights Act in 64 and 65, by 66, blacks were participating enough in the system where by 70 was the first year. Race was still the dominant issue, but the candidate, but moderates were consistently winning primaries by 70 because you had a large number of blacks. In 70 is a good year to you because that's you had Jimmy Carter, you had Dale Bumpers, you had Reuben Askew, you had Bill Brock, you had John West, you know, across the board. That was a new breed of Southern politicians. To some extent because they were image guys and media was being used, but more importantly, that was the first year statistically that blacks were participating enough to where a moderate would get through the climate.
That was also a year that Carter ran against Sanders using race.
66 Carter ran against Sanders using race. Carter, by the way, is an interesting phenomenon. Most people don't know this, but you can get acetate. Carter ran a race against Sanders. No, wait a minute. Let me think of the Carter thing. Carter ran first against Lester Maddox.
Yeah, the Sanders thing.
Yeah, the Sanders thing, you're right. That's when he did the baseball pitchers and all that. But that was that was not overt racism and so forth. But he was doing that in a Democratic primary, position himself to come back to general election as the moderate against Powell, Sewell, and Sherman. But by the way, just as a point of reference, what Carter did was go out in 66 and run as the moderate candidate against Lester and lost, and then used the Lester Maddox formula, the same formula Maddox used.
That was also true of George Carter Long.
Oh, sure, when he first ran. Well, his famous, I ain't going to be out of Negro's day. But the point I'm making is race was the dominant issue in Southern politics all through the 50s, the 60s. The 70s began, diminished, or began two things, really. The competitive two parties. 60s, you had the Goldwater phenomenon, and you had Nixon and so forth. But basically, the 70s is when you had a crystallized two-party thing beginning. So in 1980, I think the crucial thing of 1980 is number one, the two dominant issues in Southern politics, which had been race and party, meaning you have to be Democrat to win, it pretty well dissolved. And the main issues became the economy and national defense. Now, that's interesting in that those are the issues, basically, that Goldwater. In other words, the South in 1964 was considered reactionary, Neanderthalic, and so forth. because we want mainstream on not only on the race thing, but on the economic issues and national defense and all. We were considered, you know, ultra conservative and everything. What happens is a guy like Reagan, who campaigns in 1980 on a 1964 Gold Water platform, minus the boo-boos and obviously the Voting Rights Act, TVA, and all that bullshit. But when you look at the economics and the national defense, what had happened is that the South went from being behind the times to being the mainstream. In other words, so what you had was two things happening that totally wash away the Southern strategy, the Harry Dent type Southern strategy, and that is that whole strategy was based, although it was a more sophisticated than a Bilbo or a George Wallace, it was nevertheless based on coded racism. The whole thing, busing, we want a Supreme Court judge that won't have bus. Anything you look at could be traced back to the issue in the old Southern strategy. Now, it was not done in a blatantly discriminatory way. But the Reagans did not have to do a Southern strategy for two reasons. Number one, race was not a dominant issue. And number two, the mainstream issues in this campaign had been, quote, Southern issues since way back in the 60s. So Reagan goes out and campaigns on the economics and on national defense. The whole campaign was devoid of any kind of racism, any kind of reference. And I'll tell you another thing y'all need to think about that's even surprised me, is the lack of interest, really, a lack of knowledge right now in the South among white voters on this Voting Rights Act. I brought all these Republican state chairmen up here to just kind of soothe them down and say, look, we're not, before we get this meeting, look, we may not do exactly what y'all like. And what I found out about is all of them were very passive. They said, we'll pretty well go along with whatever you want. And I've looked at polls in the last 4 or 5 months, and there's just no interest or no intensity in that thing among white voters. Now, that in 1969, me bringing up, or Harry Dent, rather than me bringing up those Southerners, would have been a very big reported thing. The Southerners would have come up here with some kind of manifesto. That would have been a big, major news story, ongoing and all that.
I'm just wondering, though, how much residual there is. Okay, so there's no race, but there is busing as an issue.
Okay, let's talk about what an issue is, Saul. When I talk about an issue, I say, I'm a pollster, okay? I ask an open-ended question. What's the biggest issue facing you today? You poll 600 people, and then you put on a continuum. 45 to 55% will say economics. 12% will say national defense. Busing will not even register on the top 10. On an aggregate, busing hadn't been on the top 10 of open-ended issue questions in any poll I've seen since 1972. And it's gone. And now it's gone. No. Excuse me, Saul. I don't want to. It's gone. It's been on the top 10, but it hadn't been the top. And by 1978 to 1980, busing hadn't even been a top 10 issue. So sure, everything's an issue. But I'm saying is,
I'm just wondering how much residual there is that cold racism in the anti-government, anti-Washington, states' rights, return to states' rights, defederalize, how much there is in the old day, the residual of the old days there is in the antipathy towards welfare programs, poverty programs, which are after all on blacks. And other political, social, economic programs which do give power to black folks or poor folks or identified with giving power. But again, it's not purely Southern, but the Legal Services Corporation. They give problems to the municipalities of Mississippi,
yeah,
who want to gerrymander and those kind of things. I'm just wondering.
Well, sure, okay, but I think this, you know, and don't get me wrong, you go out to these white country clubs, and they're still going to sit out there and say, well, shit, I'm tired of, I'm tired of getting everything and all that. But the bottom line is, don't get those out yet. I gotta look at it. The bottom line is, it's a mainstream thing now, and it's not grounded in racism as much as it kind of the network movie syndrome. I'm mad as hell and I ain't gonna take it. Now, statistically, your poor people and the people receiving all these things are blacks. Now, some of the Southern stuff may still be racism, but it's such a widespread thing now, I think it's almost developing into a class struggle type issue rather than a racism issue.
When you say widespread, you mean national?
I mean, I can go to a country club. I won't go to a country club. Hello?
Okay.
Hey, babe.
Fine, what's up?
Saying you can sit in a cocktail anywhere and they'll start saying, well, I'm tired of these fuckers getting welfare.
Anywhere in the country.
And if it were white, it wouldn't make any difference. There's always going to be a certain. I'll say this. My generation, your my generation, will be the first generation of Southerners that won't be prejudiced. Totally. I mean, hello? Well, y'all leave me parents, and even people 5 to 10 years older than me were in touch with things that would be in another period. But what I'm saying is that has really been sublimated by a bunch of other issues. But more importantly, is people in the South are just like any people in the history of the world. Once something becomes a reality, people adapt to it. We fought, we kicked, we struggled with all of these problems, first in 54 and then the voting rights stuff, and so but by 70s it was a reality, and you just adapt to reality and move on. So I'm not saying that it was done down there because we thought it was great or we finally understood it. It became a part of our life. So in these 80 elections, and so what I'm saying, back to our Southern strategy. So the Southern strategy now, basically, and here's another thing, it's all you and I talked about this. Who controls elections in the South? Statewide elections in the South are controlled by, if you want to use the term, George Wallace voters. Because statistically, blacks went for John F. Kennedy en masse, they went for Johnson en masse, they went for Humphrey en masse, they went for Carter en masse, and they went for Carter en masse, and McGovern en masse, all six. Of whites went for the Republican every time the man. So, the blue-collar voter in 1964 goes for gold. He carries the deep south. Remember, the other two groups went the same way. 1968, the blue-collar voter goes for George Wallace. He carries the south, deep south. 1972, he goes for Nixon. 1976, he goes for Carter. Now, we're leading up to my whole strategy in the Deep South in 1980, which I discussed with you. In other words, the whole focus group in the South is that blue-collar worker. Now, that's important when you tie it back into the racist thing, because he was also the guy who was most threatened by the black, and was also most prone to be, quote, a racist. And until 1980, and in a little bit in 1976, the race issue is how you approach that vote. Plus, the most conservative guy on fiscal matters always got his vote, and the toughest son of a bitch in national defense and foreign policy always got his vote. So, what happened is Jimmy Carter in 76 was able, plus these people, regional pride is always biggest with the lower intellects and lower income groups. So on the basis of regional pride, I'm one of you, and fuzzing the issues and making it look like, being a born-again Christian, which smacks of conservatism and trying to be conservative, he gets that group in mass in 76 and carries the whole South. Well, once he got there, and this is an important point of what I'm going to say, it was his to lose. It wasn't ours to win, it was Carter's to lose. All Carter had to do was run in place. Well, he didn't do that. He took that for granted, he went out, didn't stay on the issue. And we were able to go back in, which I didn't think we were going to be bad. I thought we could really lay it in the hamstring and bring it back in there. But what he did is default is on turf. not on anything to do with racism or the race question, but on economics and on national defense. It was his to lose. So the fact of the matter is the South is Reagan's to lose now. And as long as if Reagan goes and denounces his own economic policy or doesn't balance the budget or, you know, he could lose the South. But if not, he's going to get the South.
But he's not going to lose the South if he goes along with what the blacks want to vote against.
That should be a thrust of his. In other words, in 1968, the whole Southern strategy that Harry and those put together, the Voting Rights Act would have been a central part of keeping the South. Now they don't have to do that. All you got to do to keep the South is for Reagan to run in place on the issues he's campaigned on since 1964. And that's fiscal conservative, balancing the budget, cutting taxes, you know, the whole cluster, and being tough on the national defense. And it's going to be very hard for Reagan to...
But whether he... I'm not saying that he does this consciously, but the fact is that he does get to the Wallace voter and to the racist side of the Wallace voter by doing away with legal services, by doing away with cutting down on food stamps.
Here's how I would approach that issue as a statistician or a political scientist, or no, as a psychologist, which I'm not. Is how abstract you handle the race thing. In other words, you start out, and now y'all aren't quoting me. You start out in 1954 by saying nigger, nigger, nigger. By 1968, you can't say nigger. That hurts your backfire. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you're getting so abstract now, you're talking about cutting taxes. And all of these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and the byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than white. And subconsciously, maybe that is part of it. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that if it is getting that abstract and that coded, that we're doing away with the racial problem one way or the other. You follow me? Because obviously sitting around saying we want to cut taxes, we want to cut this, and we want is much more abstract than even the busing thing. And a hell of a lot more abstract than nigger, nigger, you know. So any way you look at it, race is coming on the back burner.
Reminds me of a great story that was told in one of the biographies of Huey Long. Huey went to a Catholic hospital, which had been a target of the racists down there because there were working on blacks, white nurses working on black patients. It was also, he had promised lots of blacks more jobs, upgrading jobs, when he was running for election. So he went to the hospital one day and just raised hell about all that white people working on blacks, and why didn't they get some more blacks in the place to work on blacks rather than have these clean and looking white nurses working on blacks. So he satisfied both constituents. His black lives more jobs, did away with money.
Yeah, and you know Huey Long, he was the only single one of those guys. You can always find some traces of that stuff consistently, didn't use the race relation.
Well, he used it, but then turned it around for himself.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about when you look at who had Bartleman and all these guys.
What about this thing that you read?
I don't want to show you that yet, because I'm not satisfied with it. That answers the question.
Yeah, that answers the question. Okay, good.
Is that all you ate? That's all I did.
You doing all right? I'm doing fine. How about you? We never did get to the barbecue.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
I made some out of the house over there for that. Well,
Texas style.
Texas style.
Well, let me give you.
Well, that was a good introduction.
Yeah.
I would take you back to 1970. And you can sort of jump from 70 to 80 and ask you what happened to the...
Wait a minute, let me make sure Saul knew that I wasn't... I didn't want to quote it.
Oh.
Hey, Saul!
So I'm going to take you back to 1970. You jumped from 70 to 80 and the impact of the race issue on the South. And I'm particularly interested in the statewide race and how you see race was... What the importance of race was in the race for governor and senator.
In the 70s?
Yeah, in the 70s. these moderate Democrats are talking about, it didn't just fade away. It would just stay there. I wondered how you saw it.
Well, I think what happened is what, you know, all these different factors are independent factors, but they work together also. So you had two things happening in the 70s. You had a situation where, starting in 66 and on through the 80s, the moderate or most liberal, as long as there's an invisible line of where you are, how, when you become a liberal in the South. When you become a liberal, you're in trouble, even in the Democratic primary. But if you're a good moderate, you stake out a victory in the Democratic primary, is what was happening in the Democratic primaries in the South. In other words, you came to a situation by 72, 74, and then right on through the 70s, racism was a non-issue, but it was a dangerous and self-destructive issue in a Democratic primary. But blatant liberalism, in most cases, was just as destructive. So what you had was kind of a moderation of the Democratic primary. Then you had the development that started in the 60s, but a hardening up and affirming development of a 25% to 35% Republican Party, Republican base vote. You had the advent of Republican primaries in the South. Mostly, there might have been two or three primaries in the 60s, but in the 70s you had a new creature called Republican primaries. I know we had our first one in South Carolina in 1974. Basically, conservative primaries were extremely conservative, extremely right-wing. Now, race never became an issue as such. It was basically who was the most conservative. And when I mean, so when I say conservative, I mean conservative. Hello? But race was never discussed within the framework of a Republican primary. Then you have to go to a general election. What you had was a Republican conservative against a moderate Democrat. The Republican conservative got generally, that's where any, you know, first of all, the issues were devoid of any talk about race and so forth for the most part. But what you had winning these, in the general election, the candidate that could best, the way the Republicans won was getting the wireless vote, getting the blue collar vote, getting the white vote. So, you know, any way that you, in a coded sense, any racism that was used.
Like Brock's race in 70 when he won the Senate.
Yeah.
And even the one in Virginia.
That's right. Any racism was used.
Long was the people.
Yeah. Well, busing, you know, all of these coded.
Gurney in Florida.
Yeah.
Gurney in Florida.
Well, I didn't follow that race at all.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, just to tie in with this, you talked about the white blue-collar worker being a sort of pivotal vote, and you were talking about presidential elections in particular. But now just what I'm more interested in is the gubernatorial and
all
U.S.
Right.
senator
race. Gubernatorial.
And, yeah, in those, wouldn't you say that in most states, the Democratic candidate has been able, in that period from about 72 to 78, to pull those voters, to keep those voters, and that's why the Republican Party.
That is right. Now, let me give you an example of someone who I'm very close with and have been a few, is Strom Thurmond. Strom, basically Republicans, and I think 80 could be a watershed year, but I mean, that's irrelevant. Republicans still don't get elected statewide in the South. And the reason is the Republican Party has not been able to put together a coalition of enough blue-collar people, George Wallace type voters, and Republican, you know, country club people. That's
what did you say about 80? Did you say 80 was the...
80 was the first year that Republicans did that, on another level other than just presidential. In other words, Richard Nixon in 72, in the 5th Congressional District of South Carolina, gets 72% of the vote. Republican Congressional candidate gets 31. And you had that across the whole thing. In other words, you had to totally separate presidential politics from the rest of politics. But 80, you know, east winds, hawkish wind across the South, the candidate that best dealt with the economic issues got 71% of George Wallace type vote. The whole key is getting 70% of that vote. It's very tough to do. Those people are my pappy was a Democrat, his pappy was a Democrat type people. So in order to get them, you have to have some very sexy, appealing type of verbiage in the campaign and the right kind of issue to get them. Strom Thurmond's been able to do that better than anyone. He has always, Strom Thurmond got 82% of the white voters in 1978. He literally got all of the Republicans and all of the blue-collar type voters. The average Republican candidate has not been able to penetrate the blue-collar voter out there.
Strom is an exception for him.
Right. And he has been a Democrat, and he campaigns in a very... Well, I'll put it to you this way. I've managed 27 Republican campaigns in the South, and I have never used the word Republican. I never put a Republican symbol on any campaign that you win a campaign. You don't win elections in the South, and I think this is still a change, by advertising that you're a Republican. What you have to do is put your candidate up there and have the best candidate and have the best issue to put together a coalition of basically 30% Republican basically the breakdown is you've got a base of 30% Republican, 40% Democrat, 45% Democrat, and the rest independents. So you literally have to get out there and put all the independents together and all the Republicans together. There has not really been a meaningful Republican Party in the South in the 70s to the extent other than Virginia, which the way I analyzed the parties, I didn't take them like 78 analyzing the parties. Virginia is a statistical artifact, and it's not a southern state as such demographically when you look at the Deep South. You know, the Deep South is one thing, and then the peripheral South is another.
How do you see the race in at this level, sub-presidential level? Of course, I can see your argument about Reagan's use of the issue or non-use of it, but he has a national constituency. But how is the Republican Party going to come to grips with it? I think Carol Campbell's an interesting
example.
Oh, is that right? I interviewed him a couple of years ago.
Got Campbell and I back-to-back in this.
He's a very interesting politician. And in this interview, he was very candid about the black vote. He talked about that race in South Carolina in 78 for the governorship. And the use of the appeal of the Republican candidate to, the black voters, and how it backfired on him because it was a delicate thing. He said he went out and ran radio ads saying, "Black people, why vote for the Democrats? What have they given you? The one party system, segregation, and so forth." But he said, "Well, he overdid it." I thought that was interesting.
Campbell was a guy I managed every campaign he had. So we're kind of two guys who grew up together. I think, in my judgment, Karl Marx is the type of race and religion will always be it, but they'll always be it. The real issues ultimately are the economic issue. I'm not sophisticated enough to be an economic determinist or anything like that. But race will be within the framework of, because I feel like there's almost going to be a class struggle type of atmosphere, and blacks are going to statistically be on one side of it. And I think, for instance, the Republican Party, and I tell these Republican candidates, they're going to have a hard time getting black voters, masses of black voters, just by appointing a black to be the Air Force Secretary or something like that. They're either going to have to change their entire issues to appeal to masses, or keep the same issues, forget racism, let the chips fall where they may, and you're still going to have a black-white split, I think, just because of the economics involved. let me tell you something I did. I did a study for graduate work of the Thurman campaign, which I directed in 1978. We got about 8% of the black vote in the traditional black precincts. Then I went back and selected 300 blacks. I've got a tape of every registered voter in the state. So I went and selected 300 blacks out of areas that were 98 to 96% white. That were $30,000 a year above people. Meaning black lawyers, black doctors, black, black people who were making $30,000, which in 78 in South Carolina is about like making $60,000. Thurman got 38% of that for black vote. So now, what affirmative action and all this is going to do in the long run is create a legitimate black middle class, an upper middle class. That voter, in my judgment, will be more likely to vote with his economic interests than he will anything else. And that is the voter that I think, just through a fairly slow but very steady process, will go Republican. Because I'm finding that now. The blacks that have helped me in the campaigns have been doctors, lawyers, and people like that, and they're very interested in getting involved. And they're getting nothing out of the Democratic Party. They're getting nothing out of it. So I think that is basically what's going to happen. And I think race as such is going to dissolve as an issue. But you are going to have the race question in the sense of, on one side, you're going to have a guy who's a millionaire, and he's got something in common with a guy who's making $10,000 a year. You know, he's busting his ass, and he's putting into the system, and he's paying taxes. And somebody else is not doing anything and taking out of the system. Those two guys, you know, the George Wallace voter and the millionaire have something in common. And I'll tell you something else. Statistically, as the number of non-producers in the system move toward 50%, that makes the system more and more polarity to where that drives the Wallace guy and the traditional Republican closer and closer together as they become threatened as their taxes go up and as inflation goes up because of the non-productive side of society.
Well, just moving away from the race issue, just in general, you don't have, from what you said, I don't get the feeling that you have tremendous optimism for the Republican Party in the near future below the presidential level. So, is that right from what you're saying?
No, I think that we have this tremendous opportunity over the Senate level, gubernatorial, and number one, statewide. In other words, you know, I believe in kind of a funnel down, you know, presidential where Senate, the government, then congressional, then the state houses. I think that you have a situation now because of this fractured party identification. Like I say, that's fractured. And the candidate that best approaches and best identifies with the economic issues and national defense will win. Every campaign I was involved in, and I'll just name a few of them, I had Gene Johnson against Richard Pryor. I had Tommy Hartnett against Bud Ravenel. I had John Napier against John Jenneret. I had Floyd Spence against Tom Turnipseed. And all those campaigns were popular.
This is a consulting organization
that I was president as well as doing Southern, Deep South, and Reagan. And in all of those campaigns, plus I was peripherally involved because one of my partners with the Paula Hawkins thing and the East thing. And in every one of those races, the reason we won is that we best identified with economic issues and best identified with national defense. Put ourselves with the electorate, put the Democrat over here. Now, in a situation where the Democrat best identified with the most credibility with the economic issues and all, he won with no trouble. South Carolina, Fritz Hollings walked over his other guy. He was able to position himself as being conservative on the budget committee, this, that, and the other, being in command. He had no problem. We were able to print Richardson Pryor as a big spender, part of the problem type guy, inflationary type guy. Same with Pug Ravenel. Placed our guy as the conservative and this, that, and the other. I think we're now down to to real issues. I mean, economics and national defense. And I think in any given situation, the Republican can best stake out those issues, he wins, statewide or on a congressional basis. And that never has been the case. 80 is, I think, the weather is the watermark year in that South.
You mentioned the fractured party identification situation. These white blue-collar Southerners, if they, when asked by surveyors what party they belong to, they invariably say Democratic Party. Are you saying that...
Or independent.
Or you'd say, yeah, or independent. Rarely Republican. But they, if they consistently vote Republican or can be lured to vote Republican, at some point you almost want to call them Republican.
Well, sure, they want to, but they will call themselves independents an awful long time. Because you know, always they're still voting for the Democrat that lives down the street that's on the county council. Or the Democrat, I mean, they are independents because, I mean, they're voting for a Republican for the president, Republican for U.S. Senate, Republican congressman, but there's 15 other offices on the ballot, and every one of those guys they're voting for is a Democrat.
When is that going to change?
Well, that's the local level is a different. Okay, first of all, I did a paper on Congress, and I'm sure you've seen the same numbers. A U.S. senator has a 61% chance of getting reelected. A congressman has a 96.4% chance of getting reelected. Simply because of the homogeneity of the district, the whole bit. So, therefore, those kind of simple statistics, I can look back in 1980 and say, I didn't think it, but sure it was possible for us to pick up all those Senate seats. Statistically, it was 40% chance. That's pretty good numbers. It's not great. But it's very tough to fight the statistics that have nothing to do with party identification, nothing to do with anything else. Basically, the power of incumbency and a congressional district. Now, when you get down even on a smaller level, these little state houses and state senates, and you got all these incumbents, my House of Representatives, South Carolina, we've done some revolutionary things. We now control the congressional delegation. 4 Republican congressmen, a Republican U.S. senator, 20 Republicans in the House, 125 Democrats. Those 125 Democrats are going to run for re-election. There's no way to entice them to switch parties because you can't go out and tell a guy, you know, if you switch, we'll give you all this good stuff, because they're still in the majority party. And as long as those guys are running for re-election, so the only way you basically win is in new seats. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So you slowly creep up on new seats. There's actually 3 parties in the South. There's a president, there's a statewide party system, there's a congressional district party system, and there's a local party system. And they're 3 separate entities. There's some similarities, some changes in anything else, but there's actually 3 party systems, which generates a whole set of circumstances in each different case.
Southerners looking to the Reagan administration for assistance in boosting realignment at the local level?
Yeah.
And can it?
But very candidly, this is going to be very tough. I think that the whole nature of politics, because of the fractured party system, because of the media system and so forth, creates a situation in which one individual or one institution, presidency, individual being President Reagan, is going to have a hard time affecting behavior in situations unrelated to his own specific thing. In other words, Reagan has a good chance of affecting behavior when he gets on TV to talk about, please support my tax program, please support my allowance. But for any politician in America, has a tough time anymore of affecting behavior in other races. Now, I have not done a paper, but I've read studies, and I firmly, as a practitioner, can tell you that from the 70s, starting in the 70s, there's a very, very definite trend line on endorsements having decreasing effect. Now, South Carolina, again, as an example, I supported Reagan. I was his campaign director. Jim Edwards and Strom Thurmond, everybody came out for Connor. Now, in 1955 or something like that, there's no question there wouldn't even have been a race in South Carolina. But as much as Thurman's the most, got more credibility than any other political figure probably in the country within his own state, he was not able to keep us from just walking all over John Connor. If it had been Strom Thurmond versus Ronald Reagan, Thurmond would have killed him. But what I'm saying, in general, the president can't go at him, you know, even like he could in the 60s, but he couldn't do it in the 60s. See, in other words, it never happened. What they wanted to happen in the 60s never happened. So I can't, you know, in other words, we can do a lot of things to help. We can go out and bring candidates in here and help recruit them. Hopefully the block ran, you know, a whole bunch of things to help. But I do not see one person or one institution drastically being able to reorganize something like this. I think it's going to, you know.
But if any one person is doing it, you've got the job.
That's right. What I'm doing is saying I've got the job, but I'm trying to be reasonable about my work. Let me see this. This may be something you can use. But it basically addresses this same thing, the precinct organization.
Well, what about that race in Mississippi yesterday?
Well, it's a good example of what I'm talking about. You know, if we had to, there ain't no question that Reagan is popular as shit down there, because I saw three polls on the thing. He's up in the 70s. And if endorsements were all that were cracked up to be, I mean, the guy would have walked all over this board. You know, that's just one of many, many issues, and the more important issues are right down in there.
The heavy black vote, of course, won it for him. So
oh, sure.
The Republican had a majority of white support.
Oh, sure. I